Get ready for the unknowable, the undiscovered, and the unrelenting. Get ready for the unbodied science fiction radio theater. This month's episode is titled 6040 Part 3 and was written by Jeff Zink.
I appreciate what you did for us.
The voice radiated down to Jack. He stood in the courthouse on Morgan Street, his lungs pained from taking in so much cold air. He was still catching his breath after running from the beast.
"So it was you, then, who gave me that mobile," Jack answered, looking in the direction of the voice.
He'd wanted to give some kind of response, but upon hearing it, he immediately thought it sounded weak.
"I figured it was," he added. The voice laughed. "Well, who else did you think it might be?"
Footsteps called from the far corner of the courthouse, and Jack flashed his light near the sound. He discovered a man, the same who'd spoken with him at the settlement camps, walking toward him.
"I'm here to talk with you about what's going on," Jack said, his voice tumbling out.
Though he was only a few feet from Jack, the man was difficult to make out in the gloom of the courthouse. His face stood out, a bleached white splotch amongst the thick shadows. His figure was partially visible, but it was difficult to trace where the man stopped and the darkness around him began.
"Talk, then."
Jack looked away.
"I thought it must be you who sent me that mobile and caused the power outage, so I thought maybe you're responsible for the other things going on around town, like the road closures and the barricades and..."
"Maybe.
What are you trying to accomplish?"
The man turned away from Jack and proceeded to pace around the room, his head floating, turning, disappearing, and reappearing in the dark.
"We're setting things into motion, like a catalyst. Remember when I told you about changing the sky from gray back to blue? That's what we're doing."
"And when the sky is blue,
the people will be free again."
Jack took a step back. The man stared at him, his eyes large.
"Tell me something. When should a parent give his child more freedom and responsibilities?"
"When they are mature enough to handle the responsibilities, I guess."
"Right. And what happens if the child has that maturity, but the parent doesn't let them go out into the world?"
Jack rubbed his hands together. "Then the child probably stays home longer than he should."
"And think of all the opportunities he'll miss," the man said, pursing his lips together in a slight scowl. "Only when someone is truly independent can they make decisions that will give them the best lot in life. We're in the same position now, Jack, held back by the state when we really should be in charge of ourselves."
Jack shook his head.
"But we are in charge."
The man was silent.
"We are the state."
The man raised both eyebrows.
"Can an employed person hold an office in the state?"
"No."
"So what you meant was, we, the employed, are the state. That's excluding a great number of people from governance."
"But they get their needs met anyway."
"Do your parents get their needs met?"
Jack pushed his hands into his pockets.
"So the unemployed aren't part of the state. Who is? Do you know any of their names?"
"Well, Spectre is a member of the state, and Alan's boss is, too."
"Whom does Spectre answer to?"
Jack fidgeted with his mobile in his pocket.
"I don't know." "And who is his boss's boss? And his boss's boss's boss?"
The man smiled.
"And who is at the very top?"
"Someone, I don't know," Jack said. His face was feeling hot.
"I'm sure if I called the employee assistance hotline, I could find out." "I bet you couldn't. I bet they'd cycle you around from department to department before you got tired and hung up. I bet you wouldn't even speak to a real person the whole time."
Jack turned his back on the man.
"You are not the state, and they know that."
Jack began walking away.
"In their eyes, you exist only to be exploited."
Jack kept walking, the man's voice becoming more muffled.
"I don't think that's true." "No? Think about the average number of vehicles manufactured at the transportation center."
There was a silence as Jack contemplated the numbers.
Now, think of the number of people in the country who have vehicles, or who can even afford one. The numbers don't add up, do they? So what if they made some extra vehicles? Some? They made 1.5 million extra vehicles last year. There's no demand in the country for that many cars. Where do you think all those cars went?
The state's fleet?
The man laughed. They don't need that many vehicles for themselves.
There was a pause.
Where else would the cars go then? Asked Jack.
Same place all those surplus electronics, clothing, and equipment are going. Don't tell me you've never considered this before. We are such an industrious people, but we never even see a fraction of the fruits of our labors. Where did you think it was all going?
Jack frowned.
I don't know. I don't understand how our economy works.
I'm not surprised you don't. We're trained to give away our control to the state, with the hope that they have our best interests in mind. Nobody ever takes the time to question it. They just accept it. Meanwhile, the state profits from hard work and lives in luxury.
The state wouldn't do that.
Then tell me exactly where the surplus is going. It's not being given to the employees, and it's surely not doled out to the people in the settlement camps.
But why would the state need so many things, even if they were greedy?
The man snorted.
You aren't thinking broadly enough. The state doesn't hoard these things. They sell them.
To whom?
But Jack already knew the answer.
They can't do that, he said quickly. The AFO is our enemy.
The AFO. How much do you really know about them? We digest what tidbits of information are fed to us by the state, but that's all we get. People lie, you know.
But the attack in the subway a few years ago, the abductions, the increased security, that can't all be a lie.
Silence.
It still doesn't make sense to me. Why would the state do these things?
They want control!
The man's voice reverberated throughout the courthouse.
They benefit from the way things are, and they want to keep it that way.
Well, that wouldn't happen, Jack answered, his voice weak.
Why not? Because you don't want it to? Because it's easier just to buy into the lie and do as you're told?
Jack, the truth is staring you in the face.
You've felt that things aren't right, haven't you?
I don't know.
Give yourself more credit than that. You're smart. You work your ass off, but you never move ahead. The people in power stay there, and you stay at the bottom. You know this entire system is built solely to benefit those at the top. Before now, you haven't known how to properly deal with it. But I'm telling you that things are changing, and you can be a part of that change.
Jack continued moving away.
There's no other way to get what you want. The state won't give it to you. This is it.
Jack paused and looked back. How is this really going to help me?
You can avoid becoming like your parents.
Jack approached the man.
How does all this happen, then?
I told you, things are already in motion.
Jack took his hands out of his pockets.
Then what can I do?
There will be another delivery to the food distribution centers in 4 days, correct? Some of the items in the shipment may have been switched around. Make sure you're the only one to inspect everything before the delivery goes out.
Jack approached the man.
What's been switched?
The less you know, the safer you'll be.
Jack faced the man again.
Will you do this? Will you be a part of our cause?
Jack hesitated. The man's hand appeared from the inky darkness, and Jack shook it. His flesh was cold and dry.
You're a good man, he said.
He pulled his hand away and receded back into the shadows.
Hey, how do I contact you? Jack called out.
I'm IL, and I'm always around,
the man answered, bemused.
And are you the one responsible for the beast?
Jack stepped forward, then withdrew his mobile from his pocket and began waving it around. The man was nowhere. Jack stood by the opening into the courthouse for some time. The scene before him looked strange, rendered artificial by IL's revelations. It felt as if the street was a mock-up, a model, realistic but hollow inside. Jack thought of the transportation compound, and it appeared as another model with doors that led nowhere and manufactured air pumped in. Jack had always prided himself on his constant desire for knowledge, but this new information twisted his stomach into knots. He ducked out of the courthouse and carefully made his way back to his vehicle. The next morning at work, video cameras had been placed in every room in the shop.
"Just as a precaution," Mr. Spector assured them.
One camera faced Jack's desk, and every 5 minutes a green light within its clear, lemon-shaped body would blink. Jack tried to ignore it. After his shift was done, he went to the nearest food distribution center to pick up his rations. As he waited in line, a woman tapped him on the shoulder.
"Hey, Jack."
He turned to look at her. It was Chan. Several weeks earlier, a few skillfully made comments of Jack's had saved her from being terminated. He smiled at her.
"How are you?"
Jack laughed, the pleasantry seeming to him so out of place at that moment.
"I'm doing all right. How are you?"
I keep telling myself things could be worse, but then they get worse. I should just keep my mouth shut."
A man in black armor passed them, carrying a rifle over his shoulder.
"Have you seen very many men like that around Central City?" Chan asked.
"No, have you?"
"He's the third one. They worry me. Why are they here?"
"They probably just want to make us feel safe."
"Guns don't make me feel safe."
Another man bearing a rifle passed them. "Going back to the way things were, that would make me feel safe."
"What was so great about the way things were?"
"It wasn't that things were great, exactly, but..."
There was a break in Chan's speech, and she stared absently ahead for a moment before continuing.
"At least things were predictable. I can get through life if I know what's coming next, no matter how difficult it is. Right now I feel like I'm blind. I can't see what's happening around me, and that freaks me out."
"I think we've always been blind."
Chan laughed.
"How would you even know you were blind then?" she asked.
"When other people started telling you what they could see."
A mother herded two small children down the line to the end.
"I think I'd like to have kids someday," Chan said.
Jack looked at her.
"You want a family?"
"Yeah, eventually. I want something else in my life."
Then she leaned in and whispered to Jack.
"Grateful as I am, being employed isn't that important to me. My job doesn't comfort me. But I couldn't really have kids now, what with the way things are."
"What do you think things will be like down the road?"
Chen looked around.
"I can't say. I have hopes, but I don't know for certain what the future will be like. It's not really in my hands."
"You don't think so?" Jack asked.
"No. The state is in charge."
A siren call tore through the air. The men with rifles began herding the people into a nearby building, waving their hands and shoving those who didn't move quickly enough. Jack and Chan were squeezed into the doors and up several flights of stairs into a room crowded with long tables and bookcases.
"Stay away from the windows!"
one of the men shouted. A powerful thump came from outside, followed by the rattle of gunfire.
"What's going on?" Chan asked.
She and Jack sat crumpled under a table. Outside, something had been overturned, its parts clattering and banging against the ground. More gunfire erupted.
"Try not to listen," Jack said. "Do you want a boy or a girl first?"
"Oh, it doesn't matter," Chan answered, eyes darting around the room.
People had taken shelter beneath the other tables.
"I never thought about having a family," Jack said. "I always thought the world was too terrible to bring anyone into."
"But your parents brought you into this world. I bet you made them happy."
Jack stared forward.
"What is it?"
"Oh, I just..." Jack started, shaking his head as if to dislodge a thought. "I just realized I haven't seen my parents in a long time, since all of this started."
"You used to see them often?"
"Every week."
Chan moved closer to Jack.
"You could start visiting your parents again after all this stops."
"Yes."
"When do you think that'll be?"
"When someone sets things right again. But I don't know who that is."
"I hope they come along soon," Chan said.
Outside, things were quiet. The next 2 days were filled with mayhem. Entire city blocks were being sectioned off, accessible only by the men with rifles. Jack watched them scuttle in and out of a warehouse by the transportation compound. The other employees declared the men were from the state, but Jack wasn't so sure himself. In the past few days, the only word coming from the state was an advisement for all employees to continue showing up to work and to comply with any measures taken. It didn't acknowledge the barricades, the armed men,
or the beast stalking around Central City.
I'm not sure who they're trying to fool, the database manager said to Jack. It was the morning after he and Chan had hidden from the beast. Everyone knows what's going on around here about the country crumbling. They should just tell us the truth, that this is all just another plot by the AFO.
He wasn't the only person who thought the chaos was being caused by the AFO, the country's unloved neighbor to the south.
Have you heard somewhere that the AFO is responsible? Asked Jack.
No, but it's pretty obvious. They've always wanted to destroy us.
The database manager logged into his computer.
The state needs to do its job and protect us, and part of that is being honest with us.
Jack nodded and quickly left the room. The database manager didn't show up for work the next day. The employees were advised by Mr. Spector not to bother picking him up in the carpool or trying to contact him. The employees spoke less often to one another after that, and when they did converse, they made sure to keep their backs to the cameras. Jack had disjointed, vivid dreams on the night before the deliveries were to go out. In the first dream, he was detained by the men with rifles because his employee ID was incorrect. Despite his assertion that he was who he claimed to be, every time he typed his ID into a computer, it would come out wrong. In the second dream, he found himself in an outdoor courtyard surrounded by high cinder block walls. On the other side, he could hear people screaming and gunfire. Jack tried to scale the wall, but he couldn't get over. Then the beast appeared, filling up half the space in the courtyard. It charged toward Jack, and all he could do was fall to the ground and shield himself with his arms. The moment it collided with Jack, he was thrown into darkness. The face of the man, Ayel, popped into focus a second before Jack awoke. His body tingled. He took deep breaths to slow down his heart. The deliveries were to begin at 10 that morning. As usual, Jack inspected every one of the 300 containers to be sent out. He moved slowly among them, deliberately looking over each box with the same precision as the last. The exterior of each one was the same, and the seals over the lids were unbroken and official-looking. Jack couldn't tell which ones had been replaced by IL. A container would look counterfeit one moment and legitimate the next. He signed off the report and helped the drivers load the containers. Jack felt lightheaded as he watched the trucks drive away. His throat was dry. He remained at his desk for a few minutes, attempting to focus on a report. But it wasn't more than 10 minutes before Jack had slipped out of the transportation compound with the address of the first food distribution center on the stop. It was a short drive away. The queue already stretched down the road with sleepy-looking people collecting at the end. Jack stepped into the line. He peered down to the front, where he could see the parked delivery truck. The driver and a woman were unloading the containers. He watched them carefully set down each box, piling them up 3 containers high. Jack glanced around, expecting to see IL or some dark-garbed person leering from behind a corner. The driver and the woman finished taking out the boxes, and the woman shook the driver's hand. She turned to one of the topmost containers and began cutting away the seal, when suddenly there was a loud crash and a burst of smoke. The force knocked Jack to the ground. Dust and debris pummeled him, and he covered his head with his arms. The sound of the explosion gradually died away. Someone shrieked, and Jack jolted, opening his eyes. He stood up. Where the woman had been at the front of the line, there was now a pile of shredded plastic and clothing. The delivery truck lay on its side, the windows blown out. A few bodies lay rumpled close to the front, and just behind them, a man and 2 women attempted to sit up, their limbs twitching. The people around Jack stood up as well, bearing spots of blood on their faces, arms, and torsos. Jack assisted an old woman lying on her side, bringing her to her feet. He was removing glass from the woman's hair when, from behind the group, the men with rifles stormed in. They began seizing people and handcuffing them. With many loud cries, the people bolted in each direction. The men with rifles shouted at them to stop, then shot a few rounds into the air. Those running ducked but kept moving. Jack ran away down another street and, coming upon a flight of metal stairs partially hidden by a cement wall, took refuge there.
He rocked his body back and forth, each breath coming quickly and briefly. Then he pushed his back against the wall and slid down into a sitting position. His throat felt tight and pained, like someone was gripping it from the inside. Hot tears streamed down his face. His lip trembled and he bit down on it. He knew Aiel was responsible for this, and he had helped. Another thought sprang up in his mind. This wasn't the only shipment Aiel had tampered with. There would be other bombings all around the country. More people would die. His stomach constricted, and Jack doubled over from the pain. He closed his eyes. He had to get back to the transportation compound to warn the other drivers. He knew doing so would implicate him in the bombings, but he couldn't stand the idea of anyone else dying. He flew down the road in his vehicle back to work. In the distance, he could see a tower of smoke rising into the gray sky. He gripped the steering wheel and sped up. As he got closer, he realized the smoke was coming from the transportation compound, accompanied by flames bursting out of the exposed roof. Jack stopped his car a few feet from the ruined gates of the compound. Employees circumvented the rubble and fled down the street. Jack saw Chan, leaning against the wall.
"Get in!"
Jack called, pushing the passenger door open.
"Now, before those men arrive!"
Chan entered the vehicle and Jack sped off.
"Are you okay?"
Chan wiped a black smudge from her arm.
"Yes. Did you see what happened?"
"No."
"I think something in the dock blew up, but I don't know what."
Jack turned abruptly down a road, the tires squealing.
"It was the supplies that were sent out to the food distribution centers. They had explosives inside."
"Oh my God." Chan slowly crossed both arms over her body.
"Why would someone do that?"
Jack sighed. "I don't know." He took another turn. Just ahead of them was a checkpoint. Jack slammed on his brakes and reversed, taking them into a small side street. He parked.
"What are you doing?" Chan asked.
"I don't want to go through that checkpoint. I don't want them to know where I am." He released the steering wheel and slowly brought his hands to his lap.
"There's something I need to tell you."
He took a deep breath and tried to swallow, but his throat was dry.
"I knew there was something in those boxes."
Chan leaned away from Jack.
"What? You knew there were explosives in those boxes?"
"Not explosives," Jack said quickly. "I knew something different would be in those containers, but I didn't know what it was until today."
Chan's eyes narrowed. "How did you know that?"
"The man who put them there told me. He said it was part of getting rid of the old world and building a new one."
"I don't understand," said Chan.
"I met this man in the settlement camps one day. He told me all these things about the state and how they use us for our own gain. He said he was going to change things for the better, but he needed help. I promised I'd make sure those packages went out without being inspected." He looked at Chan's eyes watering. "I said I'd help him, but I didn't know he was going to do this."
Jack turned quickly away, more tears running down his face.
Chan glanced out the window at a paper writhing in the breeze. "I thought I was doing something good, but I screwed up and people got killed."
Neither spoke for some time. Jack sat staring at the dashboard, petrified.
"Listen," Chan reached out and put her hand on Jack's. "You didn't mean to kill anyone, did you?"
"Well, of course not. But those people still died and I was responsible."
Jack had a sharp intake of breath, and Chan squeezed his hand harder.
"Jack, you didn't do this. It was that man. He was determined to cause mayhem any way he could. If he hadn't convinced you, he probably would have dragged someone else into all this. He's the one who is responsible."
"That still means I was used."
"I think it means you learned a lesson the hard way." Chan sighed. "The really hard way."
Jack started up the vehicle.
"What are you doing?"
"I have to figure out where those other bombs went. I can't just sit around knowing more people could die."
Jack parked far from the courthouse. He circled the building several times, searching for anyone, and, finding the streets empty, ducked inside. He called the man's name several times, his angry voice echoing. Aiel's pale face emerged from the darkness. The two stared at one another for a moment.
"Bastard,"
Aiel's lips curled into a smile.
What's wrong? Are you unable to handle a little revolution? Have things become too real for you?
You made me kill people. Aiel blinked. They had nothing to do with the state. They were innocent people.
Oh, don't be so naive. You should have understood that things like this would happen.
But I didn't want this. I wanted to help people.
You are. Their deaths will spur our movement even further. You don't understand. The people have become too complacent. They don't even know how to feel rage, anger, disgust anymore. They needed to be woken up. That's all we've been doing.
That's not how you change things.
Is it not? I think you need to wake up as well.
Aiel blinked again, glancing around the room as he spoke.
You think things will change if we just ask nicely? The state's not going to give up its control. We need to fight to take it back. What's happening today is just another part of that fight.
There's more?
Well, it takes a lot to rouse people who've been downtrodden for so long. Introducing a little chaos into Central City has helped as well. I hope you haven't run into it yet.
Jack felt pressure building around his temples. That thing? Aiel grinned, his teeth resembling tiny polished stones. He began pacing. The pain in Jack's head grew.
The state's been using terror to keep all of us oppressed for a long time. Kind of exhilarating to watch them get a little bit scared, isn't it?
What? That beast has been terrorizing the regular people, not the state.
It's been effective in getting their attention, at least.
But there's no way to control it.
That's what chaos is.
Aiel's eyes were wide. He glared at Jack, unblinking.
I need you to tell me where those other explosives are going, Jack said.
He pulled something that had been stuffed into his back pocket. Aiel smirked.
Why, so you can make up for the people you murdered?
I didn't murder anyone. Jack raised the tire iron and struck Aiel in the back of the head. He landed another blow on Aiel's shoulder and back. Aiel shifted forward and fell onto his knees. His ribs cracked as they came into contact with the weapon. Aiel toppled to the floor. Jack held the tire iron with sweaty hands, his chest pounding.
You made me do this, he said. I didn't make you do anything, Aiel whispered.
Jack stood over Aiel. His breathing slowed. The pounding in his temples ceased. Aiel didn't move. Even on the floor, he melted into the darkness around him. Jack set down the tire iron.
Tell me where the other explosives are.
Aiel's chalky white hand shook at his side.
There's a place where you used to get your own rations, Aiel said.
His voice was garbled somewhat. His lips had turned from ivory to crimson, and his breathing was slow, gravelly. Jack watched him for a moment more, but Aiel made no attempt to move or sit up. He simply lay there, breathing weakly. Jack's vehicle screeched to a halt near the food distribution center.
Wait!
Men were unloading the rations from the delivery truck, and they paused to look at him.
Who are you?
One of the men asked.
I'm from the transportation hub. Don't open those containers.
The man scowled at Jack.
Why not?
Jack looked at Chan, and then back at the man. A teenager at the front of the line took notice of their conversation.
They've spoiled. The rations have spoiled. I need to take them back. Well, I don't remember hearing about anyone coming here from the transportation hub, the other man said, lifting another container out of the truck. Where's your order?
I don't have an order. Look, I just need to take them back. I'll get you more supplies later. Jack moved closer to one container, but the men blocked him.
I need to return those supplies.
The men stood up closer to Jack, puffing out their chest.
Well, why don't you try and take them then? Or maybe come back here when you have a real order to commandeer these supplies.
Spectre ordered it, Chan said. One man shot a glance at her.
We can go back and tell him you weren't cooperating, if that's what you want.
The man grimaced. He sidestepped to permit Jack to pass. But just as he did, the teenager at the front of the line rushed forward and grabbed one of the containers. Gripping it with both hands, he forced his way through the line, away from Jack and the others.
They're trying to steal our food, the teenager shouted. Those in line began to murmur. "We're out here starving, and they just want more. I say we decide who gets the food." An affirmative cry sprang up from the crowd.
"Give me that container, you idiot," Jack yelled. He attempted to reach the teenager, but the people in the crowd pushed him back. "You don't know what you're doing. It's dangerous."
"To hell with you," said a woman beside the container and the teen.
Jack hadn't moved more than a few inches toward the teen when, with his fingers buried under the lid, he tore open the package. The explosion threw people outward, knocking into the other bystanders. Jack quickly got to his feet. Beside a jagged black circle on the ground lay most of the teenager and woman. The crowd retreated, falling over one another. They made a wide berth around the other containers, where the two men stood frozen, eyes on the remains of the first box. Chan was caught in the torrent of fleeing people, involuntarily being pushed down the street. She jumped onto the porch of a building close by to escape the exodus.
"We have to go too," Jack said. He was at the foot of the porch, his hand out, beckoning to her. "I've got to go back. I need more information."
Jack and Chan sat on the edge of a concrete loading dock that hung out from a warehouse behind the street. Every few minutes, a vehicle raced by. The last one had been stuffed with more of the men with rifles.
"I don't think you should."
"But IL knows more. He could be planning something else."
"Jack, do you still feel responsible for the explosives?"
Jack licked his lips and stared down at his feet.
"I'm probably the only one who knows IL is involved. If I don't seek him out, nobody else will."
Chan pushed a strand of hair behind her ear.
"This could hurt your feelings, but I need to say it. I don't think you know what you're doing. You want to be helpful, but you were just trying to help out when you unknowingly sent out those bombs earlier today. I want you to think about what could happen if you get involved in this even more."
"I'm not going to walk away and pretend I don't know what's going on."
"But you don't know what's going on. What's happening now is too big for us to handle. It's the state versus, I don't know, maybe the AFO or some defection or something. This isn't our battle. We're just little ants in all this. Stay out before you really get hurt."
Jack clenched his teeth. He brought his hand to his neck and began massaging it.
"You're right."
He sighed before continuing.
"Things that are going on right now are huge. I don't understand who's involved and what their intentions are. IL lied to me once, and he'd probably lie to me again. And we both know the state hasn't been forthcoming in acknowledging their involvement in all this. But how are things ever going to change if we don't get involved? How will we ever know the truth if we don't go out and look for it?"
Chan looked at him directly in the eyes.
"You've already looked once, and you know what happened."
"Yeah, like you said, I learned a lesson the hard way. I see now what I did wrong. I let IL manipulate me with my emotions. He said what I wanted to hear. He convinced me that he could give me what I wanted if I just followed his direction. But if I had just taken a moment to consider what he was proposing, I would have seen how unrelated it was to me."
"Hindsight is 20/20, Chan said quietly.
"Yeah, but I can learn from the past, can't I? I think I know how to keep my head straight around him now. He's a viper, and I know I can't trust him, so I won't give him any trust. But I still have to speak with him. Something is being created right now, and if I don't get involved, I won't have a say in how it turns out. I want to be able to speak for what I need and what you need and what everybody needs. This is my chance to do that."
"Somehow I didn't think you'd be the type to sit this out," Chan said.
She placed her head on Jack's shoulder.
"But for God's sake, be careful."
Then quietly she said,
"For my sake, be careful."
Jack placed his arm around Chan's waist. They sat there for some time, until Jack jumped down to the sidewalk and disappeared down the street. Cold, weak sunlight fell on the courthouse. Jack climbed the steps and slipped through the opening into the interior. Upon standing upright, he was startled to see more light gushing in from a puncture in the wall a few yards from him. The hole, coarse around its edge, resembled a mouth twisting open.
It could have easily swallowed Jack. He walked closer to the hole, but stopped when he spotted some long gashes carved into the floor, similar to the ones at the recycling center where he'd found the dead man.
Ayo?
His echo sounded tinny. He approached the spot where he'd left Ayo and found only a dark pile there. He bent down to sift through it. The object was a jacket, and as Jack moved it around, he discovered how ragged it had become. It was also heavier than it should have been. He cautiously pulled the fabric apart to find a human arm, the flesh wet and chunky at one end, and the fingers knotted together at the other. Jack dropped it, the limb slapping against the floor. He stood up and saw another dark bundle lying several feet away. Trailing off from this bundle was a bloody streak that ended at a mouth. Jack had only a second or two before the beast sprang to its feet and lurched toward him. He sprinted backward for a few feet before smashing into a tall marble table, pain firing throughout his back. He fell to avoid a pass of the beast's claw, and he crawled madly around the table. Jack rushed for the opening at the window, but upon looking back at the beast pursuing him, realized he couldn't run fast enough to slip through before being overtaken by the beast. Instead, he ran for a set of double doors. In this room, a raised bench lined the wall. Jack made his way for it. The beast tore through the doors, sending wood flying. Jack dove under the bench. The beast began pacing around the room, overturning furniture with its head as it rooted around. Jack spied the beast's movements from an opening under the bench and made his way in the opposite direction. At one point, the beast paused, scratching at something with its stony claws. Jack continued to drag himself away, taking pains not to make more noise than the beast produced. He reached the end of the bench, close to the doorway, and continued monitoring the beast. The thing bent its head down to devour its find. Jack raised himself up. He jumped, far enough to clear the debris and propel himself into a run. The beast's head jerked up, and it nearly doubled over on itself as it whipped around to chase Jack. It powered forward. The beast was close to overtaking him when Jack spotted a stairway. He leapt up the first three stairs, but the beast shot out a claw and raked his left leg. Jack screamed through clenched teeth. He pulled himself up using the railing, his intact leg hopping as the injured leg bounced painfully against each stair. The beast struggled to force itself up the stairs, but could get no more than halfway up. Jack made it to the top. He looked around, and in the dim light he found that he was in a balcony overlooking the ground level. He ran his fingers over his wound, feeling the depth of it and wincing at the pain. Hobbling to the edge, Jack peered down. He could only make out the bare, white floor. The beast was out of sight. He was leaning over to try to catch a glimpse of the area underneath him when the beast flew up at him, teeth bared. Jack fell backwards and the beast rose just a bit further before sinking back downward. Its impact with the ground shook the building. There was a scuffle of movement and the beast appeared again by the balcony for a few seconds before it fell to the ground again. Jack looked around and discovered that the stairs were the only means up or down, for him at least. He returned to the edge, hoping to find some place he could escape to. Just then, he saw the beast running in the opposite direction. After several yards, it halted, turned around, and began galloping toward Jack. It leapt, rising upwards and breaking through the marble railing. Jack retreated to the furthest corner of the balcony. The beast hung halfway off the edge, its claws slashing around to gain footing. Jack found several bits of marble lying beside him, and, steadying himself against the wall, he lifted a piece up with both hands and tossed it at the beast. It struck the beast on the nose, and the thing jerked back, slipping further off the balcony. Jack threw another piece at the thing's claw, which recoiled. The weight of the beast pulled it downward, and at the very edge the balcony crumbled, letting the beast loose altogether. It tumbled down, landing against the base of a column. It bowed, cracked, and split in the middle, freeing the top half of the column. It shot straight down, crushing the beast's head with a thunderous clap. The beast spasmed several times before going still.
Jack saw all this, but he waited several minutes before approaching the edge of the balcony. Below, the beast lay unmoving, smothered. He regarded the body for a time before turning around and descending the stairs. He made for the opening to depart. He got a few paces away when the men with rifles burst through the opening, weapons drawn. In a monotonous corner of Central City, after passing through two checkpoints manned by more guards, the vehicle Jack sat in came upon a circle of buildings. They were the same white structures found all over town, but they had no windows. A sealed passage crawled underneath the structures to another building, this one encased in a glass dome. The gate, resembling a giant glass lens, rolled away to allow them to pass. Jack was ordered out of the vehicle by the men with rifles. He immediately noticed how warm it was inside the dome. A carpet of grass spread from where they had parked up to the building. Jack reached down and felt the grass, pulling a few blades free. The men with rifles nudged him, and he continued, passing a few trees and shrubs. Jack made a sidelong glance at the armed men beside him. Though they had taken him here against his will, they hadn't been unduly rough with him. He hadn't been blindfolded or even handcuffed. Jack considered the idea that they didn't know who he was, yet. The interior of the building was full of people. Some stared blankly at large computer displays, and others were seated in groups, discussing. Only a few people turned lazily from their duties to watch Jack pass by. He and the men with rifles entered an elevator that soundlessly carried them up several floors. Once they had exited, the men directed Jack to a lone door at the end of a hallway before returning to the elevator. Jack looked around and, realizing he could either take the elevator back down to the men with the rifles or enter the door, decided to see who or what awaited him at the end of the hall. Jack pushed the door open, exposing a room occupied by one oversized gray couch facing a white armchair. The walls were bare. Light gushed in from the skylight, sitting like a lacy crown atop the room. There were no other windows.
"Come inside and sit down," a man said. His tall, gaunt figure leaned against the white chair from behind. Jack obeyed. The couch was soft and yielded to his weight, pulling him down between two cushions. He gripped the armrest to keep himself up.
"You're our dragon slayer," the man said, his eyes set downward. "Should we be grateful?"
"I don't know. You don't sound grateful."
"Well, I suppose you'll have to forgive me. I have a difficult time appreciating someone who works with the enemy to destroy the state."
"Is that what I was doing?" The man's gaze rolled up to meet Jack's.
"Don't be coy. We know there was a terrorist group operating out of that building. We have intelligence."
"Then you know I wasn't involved with them." The man paused. Jack couldn't tell if he had bought his lie or not.
"So what were you doing in that part of town then? Thought you'd take a tour of the old city?"
"Actually, I was on my way to work."
"Oh?"
"Yes, I heard a noise and went in and found that beast. I didn't mean to kill it, but I'm not sorry it's gone."
The man straightened his back, pushing against a chair. "Then maybe you should be congratulated."
"No need. Somebody had to do it."
"Do you know who created that thing?" the man asked.
"No. Do you?"
The man's cheek twitched for only a second. Jack noticed.
"I figured that since I never heard of anything like that on the radio, it must not exist."
The man gave him a tight smile. "Do you know what we do? We protect the people. We provide a standard of living unparalleled anywhere else. The state has unbelievable powers to accomplish this."
"So you did know about this beast?"
The man slammed his fist against the back of the chair. "I think you take for granted the privileges you would enjoy here." Jack tried not to smile. The security of our city, subsistence needs met, even the opportunity to have the latest technology. How can you throw all that away? Because that's what will happen if these rebels succeed. You resign yourself to the abyss. Do you know what these people want? The destruction of the state. You can't possibly understand this, but if we weren't here, you wouldn't be here. The state is the only thing keeping our people from a wave of chaos that would obliterate everything. It would be just like in the past. What do you know about history? I know that once, a long time ago, there was a single government that ruled the people. That government fell, then the state came in and took over. The man circled the chair and sat down in it. The state has always been here, the man answered. Few people seem to understand that. We were there in the old system, in every market. We provided valuable services. Eventually, we became more involved in the well-being not only of those who consumed our goods, but also in those we employed. When the old government fell, we rose and took up the responsibility of governing the people. We outcompeted every other system. Why? Because the state alone was superior to all others. Why have we not outcompeted the AFO? The man leaned back in his chair. You're mistaking competition with annihilation. We don't need to wipe out the AFO in order to know we are better than them. But we could? Recent events have caused dismay, the man continued, ignoring Jack's question. Concern that an idea is festering in the population that these rebels should have their way and force the state out. What do you think about them? I think anyone who uses violence to try to gain power will only use more violence to keep it. Astute. I'm glad to see you're on our side. Jack stared at the man, trying not to show any emotion in his face.
Besides, Jack said, the things they say can't possibly be true.
What have they said?
Well, that the state forces its workers to produce more goods than is needed so that they can sell the excess to the AFO, and that propaganda is used to instill fear in people and keep them in line. But all that is just meant to stir us up, isn't it?
Some people will believe anything. But I think you're smart enough to see through their lies. That's why I want to make you an offer.
The man leaned forward.
The state wants to protect the people, and right now that means weeding out these rebels and their sympathizers. We need people who can keep their eyes open and report to us what's going on.
Well, that sounds like spying.
It's keeping the people honest. Cooperate with us and I can guarantee you a lucrative reward. What do you think?
Jack thought about the man's proposal and all the things that had happened in the last few weeks. He thought about the conversations he'd had with Chan.
Why do you want my help?
Well, the state only lets the best work closely with us. I can see from what happened today that you're certainly above average. I'd like to give you a chance to prove yourself.
Jack forced a smile. If you would allow me, I would be honored to help.
Good move. This is the beginning of your road to greatness. You're free to go.
But don't we need to set up drop points or get some sort of communication system going? You don't even know my name.
The man leaned back again and stared up at the skylight.
We are the state. We'll find you.
The man said nothing further, so Jack got up and left.
As the elevator descended, Jack's head began to throb. He felt no closer to understanding what was truly going on. Jack felt this man from the state was as accomplished a liar as Aiel had been. It was obvious they had no interest in working with Jack. They would probably try to kill him the next day or so, if he even got out of this place alive. He wondered, then, if he had done anything worthwhile after all. It seemed to him that he had only succeeded in getting some people killed, including himself. The big players continued, using humans as ammunition. He really was insignificant, like Chan had said. He tried not to think about it anymore. There was nothing he could do. The doors opened, and Jack stepped into the room filled with people working. As he passed through, he realized something. This encounter was the closest he had ever gotten to the state, and its machinery had become minutely clearer to Jack. This glimpse, small as it had been, was nevertheless revolutionary. It was important to him, even if nobody else would know of it. Jack left the building, crossing the lawn. He half expected to be gunned down, but most bystanders appeared occupied with their own tasks. They didn't notice him. At the gates, the men with rifles parted to allow him to exit. As he continued through the passage, several people walked by. One man caught Jack's attention, but it wasn't until he'd gotten back onto the streets outside that he'd recognized him. It was the man who'd given Jack the mobile a few days ago, the man who worked for IL. He was pushing a cart full of the same white containers Jack had allowed to be sent around town. Jack hadn't gotten more than a few blocks away before a raucous splitting sound filled the air. Chunks of glass cascaded down around him. He retreated to the other side of a wall to escape the flying debris. Strips of metal collided with nearby buildings, shredding windows before impacting the ground. Contorted sheets of metal bellowed as they bounced against the asphalt. After a time, the assault stopped. Jack climbed the wall. Peering through the veil of gray dust that seemed to descend from every direction, he saw the skeletal remains of the building he had just been in. The bottom half glowed orange. In the next hour or so, Jack would find more structures and Central City ablaze. He would see people fleeing down the tunnel to the settlement camps. There would be shortages and overcrowding. There would be confusion. But at that moment, Jack could only think about how open things looked for him. He now had another chance to figure everything out and make his mark on it.
You've just heard 6040 Part 3, another story of The Unbodied. Want more of The Unbodied? Go to theunbodied.com. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.